Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. Well, Max Verstappen led home Lewis Hamilton and George Russell to win the French Grand Prix and the race for the championship, with his title rival Charles Leclerc widens as Leclerc crashed out whilst leading the race. He easily led away from pole ahead of Verstappen. In fact, he was almost defending from Lewis Hamilton, who got a mega start, but maybe perhaps a little cautious at the beginning and settled into third place ahead of Perez. Leclerc would break Verstappen's DRS, and so Red Bull hauled in Verstappen for an early stop onto the hard tyres, and shortly after, Charles Leclerc would crash out at Le Bosse, losing the rear of his Ferrari in what he later admitted was completely driver error, running close to the edge of the track, very high speed hairpin, and shortly after, his Ferrari team had warned him to look after his medium tyres. Let's discuss what happened in today's French Grand Prix with our assembled team of experts in France. Back at his luxurious accommodation is Luke Smith. We have Jess McFadden, and in the UK, Matt Q as well. All right, Luke, we'll start with you as you are there. Were we denied a great race today? Would Ferrari have managed it, or did Red Bull have the pace? You've looked at the lap times. What do you reckon on Verstappen's win today?
I think we were denied what would have been a very close race between Verstappen and Leclerc. And even on Verstappen's radio on his in-lap, his engineer GP said to him, well done, and kind of said, yeah, sort of bit of a shame really that they didn't get a chance to have a proper fight, because I think it would have been very, very close. I think we saw in that early phase of the race just how close Verstappen was getting to Leclerc, and Verstappen said afterwards he was actually surprised by the tiny margin. He was surprised that he could get close and follow quite well. He thought Leclerc would be much, much faster, so it was setting up really, really nicely. We know that Red Bull brought in Verstappen quite early, but they were thinking more and more about going for the one stop. They thought tyre deg wasn't as bad as they were expecting, so they wanted to get that undercut, get Verstappen in and get him ahead. They would have had track position, but then you'd have ended up in this position where Ferrari would have probably kept Leclerc out a little bit longer, then brought him in, switched him onto the hards, and he'd have had that tyre delta against Verstappen, and it would have been this probably reverse cat and mouse game that we saw in the first stint, where Verstappen would have been ahead of Leclerc had the fresher tyres, would have been able to catch Verstappen, get ahead of him. Would either of them have considered a second stop? I think it would have been a really good race. So yeah, just a shame that unfortunately we were denied what would have been, I think, a really good finish. And yeah, as you said, the title fight, it just takes another step towards looking like it's a bit of a foregone conclusion, unfortunately. A lot can swing, but 63 points is a huge, huge lead for Max Verstappen to have as we near the summer break.
And Max saying that his Formula One championship lead over Charles Leclerc is bigger than it should be, given Ferrari's performance compared to Red Bull. Nobody wants a hollow victory, but all sports people will take the victory, because sometimes you create your own luck and sometimes there is just luck. So he'll still take the points, but Max still wants a fight in the title. He doesn't want to just walk to it or win by default, is what I'm trying to ham-fistedly say. So Luke, when you were talking or hearing from the drivers afterwards, what were their reactions? Because from the coverage that we saw on TV, Charles Leclerc took this one completely on the chin and said, hands up, this is all on me.
the no scream over the radio, I think that's going to go down in F1 radio infamy. I think it was it really just summed up Charles' mood there, and he was naturally just devastated of throwing it away as he did. But he was, as you said, he did put his hands up very, very quickly afterwards. There was a bit of confusion even from people in the media centre, myself included, when he said about the throttle over the radio. So it was sort of a suggestion of were questioned afterwards that we were thinking, oh, okay, was it down to was it a similar issue to what we saw in Austria? But it wasn't. He was talking about being stuck on the throttle as he was trying to actually get out of the wall, but the engine wasn't giving any talk, so he couldn't get out of there. The men's race was over, but yeah, he was in the media pen. He came and saw us, and he was naturally very, very frustrated. But he said, look, this is all on me. And with the championship, he said, I've got to stop doing stuff like this. I can't expect to win a championship if I keep throwing away these opportunities and these leads. And I think it's been a real hard weekend for him. I think this is another race where Ferrari could have won, should have won, and they've thrown it away. Leclerc threw it away for them today, and it just looks like the title race. It's very, very tough to see how things are going to swing around unless Ferrari go on a real run of form and Verstappen and Red Bull start dropping the ball, which they're not doing. Verstappen, he said today that you've got to take the points when they come to you. You've got to get what you can. We saw that in Austria where he didn't have the pace to win, but picked up a solid second place, and that was very, very good for his bigger championship picture. Same thing again today. The outright pace, I think it was very, very close between them, but Verstappen's come away with a massive, massive step forward in the title race. He was, I think, naturally very, very pleased with the performance, but he said, look, we still need to find more. We still need to take another step forward because Ferrari is so strong right now. And I think that it's just a shame that we've got two teams who are so evenly matched, two drivers, I think, with the racing with real respect for each other, two great young talents, but at the moment, we're not getting the kind of title fight we should be. And unfortunately, today, that was all down to Charles Leclerc's mistake.
Let's start with a discussion on Charles Leclerc and that title battle. Jess, how hard should we be on him? Because I think it's fair to say, although we don't pick favourites, he's a very likeable person. He's a great sports person role model in that when he messes up, he doesn't say, oh, well, the car was loose at the rear end and it went round. He went, I made a mistake. I think it's a great, he is genuinely also a really nice guy. But how hard should we be on him? Because Verstappen and Hamilton and world champions don't make these kind of mistakes too regularly. What are your thoughts on Charles Leclerc's championship battle?
Yeah, it's a tough one because, I guess, to be honest, I mean, we're the media, right? So we comment on everything and we will be as hard as we like on certain drivers. But at the same time, he knows where he's at and we know where he's at. It's almost like one of those things where you almost don't need to comment on how bad that was. He's in a championship battle where there's been, Ferrari have had so many things go wrong that a driver error, they can't afford them, which I guess if you're looking at it from a holistic point of view, Ferrari need to be doing better by their drivers. I definitely think they do. I think today was also not only a driver error, but a team error too. So they had a pretty much a double whammy there in terms of things not going their way or just things being played very badly. So it's a double whammy. And I think if he wants to be, he knows, right? If he wants to be a world champion, he can't be making these mistakes. So we can probably be as hard as we want on him. And I think we will be, you know, I'm sure driver ratings will not see him very favorably. And we're going to be carry on talking about him today and what could have been, but he knows it. And I think that's the difference with Charles is he owns up to it a lot. Like he said from the get-go, that was my mistake. I made an error. I don't deserve to be a champion if I'm going to keep making those mistakes. He knows it. So I almost feel like he's doing the job for us and we don't really need to make many comments about it. We will, because that's our jobs. But at the same time, yeah, you can't... Consistency in a world championship is key. We've seen so many world championships won on consistency and arguably not on outright talent. Oh, getting controversial. First comment in and then we're getting controversial. Maybe that's another podcast for another time. But I think, yeah, I think he knows he can't afford it because he also can't rely on the team. So it's one of those scenarios where we know Red Bull don't make these kinds of mistakes, or they make them very, very rarely. In terms of team errors or strategy errors, they make them very, very rarely. Their reliability seems to be pretty together. And it's not the same to be said about Ferrari right now. So a driver error is an absolute... You've chucked points away where we're going to... You know, Max was very much... And he keeps saying this, isn't he? Every time anybody asks him, oh, can you settle down? Can you relax? You've got such a big buffer now. We're going into the summer break and you're well ahead. And he doesn't want to say that it's done because he's right. It's not done. I mean, in theory, he could DNF from every race from now until Abu Dhabi, in theory. But probability-wise, he must be sitting pretty pretty. But to go to Luke's point, I think it says a lot when even Red Bull are frustrated that Ferrari can't get it together and give them a good race. That's that. I think almost that's almost more cutting than anything that we could write or say or do. If your competitor is like, for the love of God, give us a race, that's savage. That's next level savagery.
I mean, Jess is saying we can't get much more damning than a Red Bull comment, but I shall try and say that for me is like less excusable than Vettel 2018 in Germany when he biffs it into the barrier at Hockenheim. It'll be that sort of memorable at the end of the season. But it wasn't rainy. Vettel, I believe, he was told to stay out that extra lap, wasn't he, for strategy. Whereas this was Leclerc trying to sort of overcome the powerful undercut, drops it, somehow manages to find the wall at Paul Ricard. That in himself is an impressive effort, going that far off track that he manages to biff it completely. Horner has said that we think Verstappen would have got there anyway. He sort of has to say that. It's not the first time that's been said this season. You think back to sort of, I believe it was Spain as well, where Horn is saying, oh, if you take Leclerc's engine go and pop out of it, then we win this anyway. I think it's a lot more marginal than that because Paul Ricard was very windy today. It's a place that's difficult to follow, sort of negating a lot of the steps that have been taken forward with these ground effect cars. And this thing which I've sort of been keen to write about recently, which is the Red Bull's heavier than the Ferrari. So as the fuel burns off towards the end of the race, that sort of excess, whether it's 2 kilos, 5 kilos, contributes a greater percentage of its overall weight. So for every sort of lap you're going off and you're burning off that tenth of fuel, that Ferrari gets quicker in relation to the Red Bull. And so at the end, you can have that really nice late race crescendo, which Leclerc has blown. There's no two ways about it. He has blown. It's a second major error to go when he span at Imola. And yes, Ferrari have dropped the ball this season. They've dropped the ball even with signs in this race, which I'm talking about. But when those opportunities come, you have to take them. And if you think about Verstappen, the way he's operating, beyond a lockup, beyond a bit of understeer, beyond a bit of, you know, sliding wide at Imola in the wet in qualifying, but still getting pole, where have the mistakes been? Where there haven't been. And that's what we've said about Hamilton time and time again. Verstappen's flaw last season was that he couldn't race cleanly, but he could still get the job done. He wasn't making mistakes of this level, whereas Leclerc is. And yeah, I'm really sort of beating down on the guy, but you know, he's got the opportunity, or he has to take the opportunities when they're presented to him, when his car is working, and he hasn't done that. And that is just a fundamental flaw. That's really critical.
We're going to talk about the other Ferrari and Carlos Sainz in a second. I think it's an interesting chat to have about Ferrari strategy. They were under a fair bit of criticism during the commentary. Luke, let me come back to you, Luke, and talk about Hamilton, who got a great start, but knew to back off a little bit and let the front two argue it out. And that was a sensible strategy. And he built on that with Leclerc falling off the track and then came home in a really solid second. We saw a late battle with George Russell and Sergio Perez in the second Red Bull. But yeah, first time that those two teammates have been on a podium together. And then, kind of supplementary question. Why do they race really well, but we see a pretty big offset in qualifying?
Yeah, I think they can take a lot of positives from today. I think that was really the maximum they could have done, second and third. I think that given where they are, which is the third fastest team still, I think that's a great result. And coming into this weekend, there was obviously a lot of hubbub around Mercedes' chances, the idea that this would be more suiting to their car. It's a very flat surface and obviously the bouncing issue they've had this season, there wouldn't be such a problem here and things like that. And in the end, that 0.8 of a second gap we saw in qualifying, it was quite a surprise, I think, even to Lewis Hamilton. He said afterwards that it was odd that they kind of like felt like that he felt really, really happy in the car, but the relative gap had actually increased, which was a bit of a concern. So it didn't have a massive confidence going into the race. But then I think a really, really well executed race, started very well. Obviously, we had Sainz out of position. They both managed to beat Perez on the road as well, which was a really, really good job. But ultimately, stood no chance to take the fight to Max. Our colleague Alex Kalinorkas asked Lewis in the press conference after the race about did he think there was any chance to stick with Max? And he said, well, no. He said that the straight line speed of that Red Bull, even when he was full gas, pedal all the way to the floor, Max was just pulling out and pulling out a bigger and bigger gap as they went along. So I think it was, I think still, nevertheless, a really good race for them. I asked Christian Horner afterwards, I said, oh, were you a bit surprised that Mercedes weren't more in the fight, given that he'd been the one saying all along, oh, I think Paul Ricard's going to be really good for Mercedes. And he said, well, yeah, Mercedes were really talking themselves up coming into this race weekend. And I'm sat there thinking, no, I think you were the one talking them up. But just classic sort of political shenanigans between the team bosses. But I think that they're still very realistic. They still know that they've got work to do. They know that this was, you take Leclerc out of the picture, Sainz obviously had the grid penalty. Realistically, they weren't going to be second and third. So, but same with Max, you play the hand you're dealt, you take the opportunities when you can, and a really good result, I think, for Mercedes. Just again, it feels like they've made another step forward. The bouncing isn't an issue anymore, and as we go towards the summer break, I think they can start to see a bit of a bigger glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel.
Earlier in the season, there was all this talk of, do they ditch the concept completely? Do they follow the Red Bull concept or the Ferrari concept? And where do you think they're at in terms of car development? Because, you know, the podiums are coming, the points are really strong, the pace in qualifying isn't there. Where are Mercedes in your head in terms of that development race?
Oh, well, it's tricky because at some point they have to go, we're obviously not winning the championship this year, let's put full focus onto 23. But unlike last year into this year, there was such an overhaul of the regulations, it was so crucial to make that switch as early as you could. The amount of carryover we're going to see into next year is more of an evolution than a revolution. So really, a lot of work you do this year will actually be very handy for next season. And as you say, Mercedes, they went their own way with their sort of car concept, with that zero pod, slim side pod design. And they're the only team who've stuck with that. And we've seen more and more teams go for more of the downwash design. And it's left Mercedes as now that both Williams have got the updated side pod design, Mercedes are the only ones who stuck to their guns on that. Andrew Shovlin, their trackside engineering director, he spoke earlier this week and said that they're not really thinking about ditching that yet because they don't think it's going to provide a massive lift in performance or anything like that. But he expects the car will look very different next season. And Lewis Hamilton, again, he's been quite clear saying that he knows exactly how he wants next year's car to look and to operate and to function, and the things he doesn't like in this car and what he wants next year's car to be like. So so I think that Mercedes ultimately can keep developing. That obviously will hopefully take them closer to Red Bull and Ferrari at the very front. We've definitely seen that gap shrink. They have been making these steps forward, and that will help them for next year year as well. But there will come a time when, yeah, you say, right, we've kind of done as much as we can with this year's car. We've got as much as we want to take on to next year. Let's start to think a little bit more about 2023. I do still believe they will win a race this year. I think even if they don't make a huge step towards on merit being with Ferrari and Red Bull all the time, I think that, yeah, there will be a race, one of those crazy races where the third fastest team picks up the win, and that'll be Mercedes, which is an odd thing to think after the last 8 years of domination. But this weekend, though, I think they can really be pleased with what they did. And double podium is a weird thing for Mercedes to celebrate, but for the first time in a very long time, they can do exactly that.
Jess, your thoughts on that double podium for the first time this year with Mercedes. And also, it wasn't a legendary race that'll get in the books. This circuit doesn't always provide that action, but we saw some interesting battles between Perez and George Russell towards the end. How did you read that towards the end? And was that a well-deserved third for George? What was your take on that little fight we saw between Perez and Russell?
Yeah, well, I guess just to kind of jump off Luke's point, I think the difference with Mercedes is that they are so consistent. And as I was kind of touching on, championships can be won on consistency, and they are hella consistent. And both drivers are pulling out now, at this point in the season, very consistent results. So I think, as Luke said, they are in prime position to benefit off any mistakes that the top two teams make. So very good position for them. And it's still it is still shocking that they've got a double podium, but it is shocking that it's their first double podium since Jeddah last year, not Jeddah this year, obviously, because we went back within 6 months. But I think, yeah, it's still quite shocking, because based on their results so far, I think we still are finding ourselves maybe less and less surprised that they're there, but that is just testament to their consistency and their reliability, which is something that the other two top teams can't always count on. So, yeah, great result for Mercedes. With the Perez-George incident, I guess it depends on which area we want to tackle first. There was the overtake,
which was an optimistic lunge that, because we're at Paul Ricard, didn't end with anyone in the gravel or the wall. So Perez bailed out of it, but both drivers furious on the radio. I mean, I kind of see both sides of that one.
Yeah, and it was quite interesting. I mean, I know that we only get to hear the radio that the world feed decides to feed to us, but we obviously heard a lot of George, and George was absolutely adamant that he was in the right. He was stating the new rules for this year about car placement and who's ahead at which point, and he was pretty damn sure that he'd made that. I think that's slightly questionable. I don't think he was quite there, so I actually think the FIA did the right thing in just saying that was no investigation necessary. I think we've spoken on previous podcasts that the FIA seem to be allowing racing, like they're kind of, unless it's like a out and out cut dry, that is not on, and that was a bad move. I think when they are that kind of marginal, they're allowing it to happen, which I think is good for F1, to be honest, because I think we could be plagued with too many 5 second penalties. Not 5 second stop go, as the Ferrari strategist thought Science had, but that's a new one for me. A 5 second stop go.
It was the way that Science even came back and was like, "No, I don't think you're right about that, lads."
He's flying around at 200 miles an hour and he's still correcting his own engine. I mean, I always try and look at these things with, I like giving people benefit of doubt, especially when they are operating in such high pressure conditions that everybody on this podcast can probably say that we've said the wrong thing in the heat of the moment or under a lot of pressure, or when we're talking live or whatever it is. And if we listen back, we're like, damn it, of course I didn't mean that. So I kind of want to give that benefit of doubt to Carlos's engineer there and just be like, he's trying to strategize. Like, he's probably definitely doing a million things all at once. So a slip of a tongue I can kind of forgive, maybe, but at the point of his job as well is to give Carlos very clear information for his race, and at that point and throughout the race, and as we've seen on multiple occasions, it hasn't been very clear, and it has been extremely confusing, which only leads to more chaos in a time where, if anything, you need your engineer to be fully calm, collected, which I think we always talk about Max's engineer GP. Like, he is very calm, collected. I think the only time we can probably talk was when he... what race was it when he was giving him a ton of data information and Max was... Oh, it was when the DRS was broken. And it was like, that was the only point where I can ever remember Max getting that heated with GP giving him information. But anyway, we digress. We were talking about George and Perez. So I think that was... Yeah, I'm glad that it wasn't a penalty for either driver. But then we got on to the VSC restart, which was... This is quite interesting. So at the time, I think it seemed quite... Like, it didn't really seem like a big deal. It just looked like Perez had been caught sleeping, that George had played it really, really well with slowing right down so that he could speed up and use his momentum, his acceleration through the corner in order to get a better line and get ahead of Perez. And that looked like very clever, very well moved, well done, Russell. But Perez came out afterwards, and I think you guys saw on the... FIA dash that we get when we get the messages coming through from the FIA, there seemed to be a problem with the VSC restart. We got a number of messages come through. Well, we got the first message saying VSC will restart, and then we didn't restart, and we were all sitting there thinking, this should have restarted by now. And then we got a second message which kind of said, oh, there's an issue here. And Perez said that it was that timing glitch that... He'd said that he'd been told that the VSC would clear at, I can't remember what it was, like turn 9, something like that. He would be at turn 9 when the VSC restarts, or be at the race restart after the VSC. And it didn't happen, and so he was getting confused by it, and George just took full advantage of that and went ahead. So I think, Luke, you got a full explanation from the FIA as to what was going on, but it did seem that it was a technical glitch, right?
Yeah, so it was a hardware failure for the FIA, and this does happen. We saw it in Monaco earlier this year, and basically the computer that was looking after the VSC and the hardware involved there, it had a failure, so the backup system kicks in. And the backup system basically didn't, when it kicked in, it doesn't pick up automatically, oh, there's a VSC already in process, it's already said it will end, so it kind of had to do it again. So that's why we ended up with two VSC ending messages instead of just the one. Whenever there's a VSC ending message, the race will go back to green between 10 and 15 seconds after that, and it is completely random when that happens. All drivers are given the same information exactly the same time. Perez afterwards, yeah, said that he got the totally wrong information. Christian Horner said, yeah, it seemed like a glitch by the FIA, we need to find out what happened there. And the FIA explained it, but they said that all drivers were given the exact same information at the same time. So Perez's claim that that was what cost him the podium doesn't really stand up. And it does seem that it just seems like Russell absolutely nailed that restart, and he was accelerating at just the right time, went to green, could really, really push. Perez was maybe, yeah, caught napping a little bit, sort of maybe a bit confused by what was going on with the messaging, was not ready to accelerate. And that's why I think we saw such a huge speed difference, and Russell was able to sweep past easily and get third. So yeah, I think that it's maybe a little unfair to say that it was the FIA glitch that cost Perez the podium, because ultimately, to quote many an F1 driver, it's the same for everyone.
So let's get on to the second Ferrari car today. Carlos Sainz pulling off a brilliant drive through the field from the back of the grid on lap 41. He overtook Perez to get into the podium positions. He was on used medium tyres. There was, whatever it was, 12, 13 laps of the race still to go. And then confusion around box, don't box. He's carrying a 5-second time penalty, which he had to serve at some point. So it's a case of, do you just steam off into the distance and hope to get 5 seconds on the guy behind you? But no, it was come and get some new tyres and use the performance of that Ferrari to fight your way through. It seems the best strategist at Ferrari is also the guy driving the car. Mac, you will come to you. Can you talk us through how you saw that today? Whether I'm being too harsh on Ferrari, whether it's just, easy pickings these days, because they sometimes invite criticism on themselves, if I say that. What do you reckon?
Yeah, in the moment, I was probably more siding with you that they'd lost what looked, to all intents and purposes, to be third place, and that was done and dusted. And I would also add as well, I get it that the race engineer made a mistake saying sort of five seconds stop and go, and it was Sainz to correct them. But he was having to do that at Silverstone as well at a safety car restart. The driver in the heat of the moment is having to outthink the pit wall. That's okay, I understand it's high pressure for anyone, but I still don't think that's quite good enough. It shouldn't be up to Sainz to be making these corrections. But anyway, having sort of read up on the race afterwards, with specific quotes from Sainz, he's accepting now that, yeah, probably the way that tyre behaviour was in that final stint, that it was the right thing to do to pit, and that's fine. I get that. And I agree with that at the end, that, you know, the fourth place they eventually got was better than perhaps, you know, they could have worked around track position to try and hold on to third, but that could have also backfired. And you know, whether it's an incident like with Leclerc, or you sort of, you know, where you sort of left a bit of sitting duck at the end. Yeah, that's all well and good. But it's the execution of it. You know, we haven't talked about yet specifically why he had the 5 second penalty, which delayed him at that stop. So obviously, you know, he had, was it the right rear was slow, and then the rear jack release was bad. And then Albon had to be so on it to sort of lock up to not go into the back of him. And then he has a 5 second penalty, but it's a 9 second stop the second time around. So although it's been unseen, 5 plus the 2.5 is 7.5. There's still a 1.5 second delay at the second stop, so it's Ferrari dropping the ball again. And then he's coming out, and I know we can talk about timing and what the world feed gets and if there's a little bit of a lag or whatever, but certainly the message he's getting about, oh, coming to pit at the end, that is definitely overlapping him either being side by side with Perez or at least teeing up the overtake. So it's the execution. You know, we can see what's going on. They have the direct feed of what their drivers on boards are doing, and at that point the pit wall only has one Ferrari to focus on. It's those little things that shouldn't be happening. And are we being harsh overall on Ferrari? Perhaps, because, you know, the initial heat, the moment reaction was, oh no, it's a throttle error. That's what's caused Leclerc to go off, not a driver error. And then same again with the, oh, they definitely should have kept him out, but maybe not so. But there's still three or four cumulative things that add up. And again, when Red Bull are effectively, and this is nothing to do with the heat of Paul Ricard, but when effectively they're not breaking a sweat, those three or four things, if it is a fight for the lead, is really critical. But where I do want to throw credit is at Sainz himself. He's, you know, like it or not, we can say he's a tacit number two driver at Ferrari. And he's come from the back of the grid with the penalties to get a really respectable fourth, maximise the car. Okay, he had that late pit stop for fresh rubber, but he was, you know, his race pace was well ahead of Verstappen's at the end, fastest guy on track. And you compare that to effectively his benchmark, which is Perez. Perez, this is one of his weakest weekends of the year. I don't know whether it's anything to do with me. I wrote a Ferrari cover feature for Autosport magazine about how well they're doing. Then they've had a terrible run of form. Same with Perez. So maybe I'll pick Verstappen next, try and tee up this title fight at the end. But this, like, I know this is really a harsh assessment, but considering how far Sainz has come back from, the fact that we had Leclerc retire and Sainz coming from the back, and Perez is still behind those guys, behind one Ferrari and behind both Mercedes, that we have to talk about as like a Gasly / Albon spec performance, where there is reason that he's not playing rear gunner. He's not doing the minimum that's respective of a Red Bull number two. When Perez got his contract extension, it was fully deserved. And I don't think there was a shadow of doubt, you know, where there was like a question marks over Albon or Gasly. But that was that sort of level of performance where it just wasn't at the races really today.
Oh, I think they're a mess, to put it very bluntly. I think there've just been far too many situations this season already that shows that they are not a well-oiled machine internally when it comes to race strategy. They haven't been clear about which driver they're backing or how. I think I actually applauded them in qualifying because they got it right. They used both drivers in order to position their top driver, or, you know, the one who wasn't going to be starting at the back of the grid because their engine had blown up in the previous race. They used those two to absolute full effect. And that was, I was finally like, oh my gosh, why can't it be like this all the time? And obviously the answer is obvious. It's because usually, or they want both drivers to be competing, and therefore you can't necessarily always use one as the number two. But we've spoken about it before. Luke and Matt have done videos for us on autosport.com's YouTube channel about how, you know, Ferrari really need to be doubling down on the driver that they think is going to take it to Max Verstappen, and maybe they haven't done it as clean cut as they should be doing. But they know, they're just, it's really messy It's so messy. Like, you know, Matt mentioned the pit stops, messy. The calls over the radio where they're asking, I mean, again, like, I don't know, maybe it'd be, I'd love to talk to more race engineers about this, but they do seem to put a lot of the calls on the drivers, which leave them feeling very frustrated and confused, which isn't their job, right? They're meant to be giving them really clear-cut information. And yes, okay, it is important for them to be gathering data from the driver in real time in terms of how is this feeling? We're seeing this data compared to what you think or what you want. That should happen, but not in the way that it always feels like they don't know what to do. And I know we joke about plan A through to plan Z, but like that's not like that must be so stressful for a driver to have to keep thinking of all. I mean, someone could argue, oh, it's great though, because they've got all these different scenarios that they've planned out for and they just move them about in real time. But that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be highly confusing. They've dropped the ball both as a team and as the drivers individually. And that does not a world championship team or driver make. That, so I think they need to look internally and they need to work out what is it that's not right, because we've been here before, right? Binotto has been criticised for, I mean, beforehand it was the fact that he was trying to be team principal and technical director at the same bounce, so he was taking on too many roles as a senior leadership position. But It's not working. They're not playing as a team. And that's the only way you win titles is when you play as a team.
Something that struck me yesterday when we spoke to Carlos Sainz, and I actually said this on the podcast yesterday to Alex, we were praising Ferrari's strategy. He said it was, I think, spectacular was the word that we used. And I said that's quite an odd thing to be saying about Ferrari team tactics or strategy. And then in the post-race media session, we were talking to Sainz, he naturally was talking about that. And he said, yeah, I think it's been unfair, some of the criticism we've got about strategy this year. And then you look at something like today and you say, actually, no, it seems fully justified. But again, Mattia Binotto was asked about it after the race. And he said, nope, I think we did all the right calls. Everything was fine. And it just seems like no matter what Ferrari do, they say they got it right. And you've got to look at today and say that with Sainz, yeah, it was a tricky situation, had to do the penalty. He thought it'd be marginal getting those tyres to the end. So there was a lot to weigh up. But it just does seem to be this confusion that is undeniable. Like, Sainz clearly wasn't sure what was going on. He was clearly frustrated over the radio. So I think it's things like that that you don't see that from the Red Bulls and the Mercedes. You see that at Ferrari. So it's something that maybe a little more self-reflection, maybe a little more accountability for them to just say, actually, no, we did get that wrong, or we're not making things as easy as they can be for our drivers, because clearly it's gonna hurt them. And I think it's something that if they want to win a championship, if they want to be a serial championship winning operation, as their two main rival teams have been in the past decade, it's something they must work out.
Yesterday, after qualifying, Fernando Alonso was telling the media, oh, he's really, really worried about McLaren because they're half a second faster than the Alpines, so he doesn't know what to do about that. So naturally, he would finish sixth ahead of both McLarens. Good old Fernando. In fact, it was Alpine McLaren, with Alonso, Norris, Ocon and Ricciardo in 6th, 7th, 8th and 9th. Luke, as we work our way down the finishing order, what are you making of that top of the midfield battle /development race / the drives today?
It's really enjoyable, I think. The midfield fight this year has been so great, all the way from, a few tenths separating you finishing like well in Q3 versus getting it knocked out in Q1. I think it's really, really cool. But I think the fight for P4, it does seem to be boiling down now to Alpine and McLaren. Alpine obviously took a step forwards this weekend. They were tied on points coming into Alpine's home race, and as you said, managed to get Alonso and Ocon home in 6th and 8th. And yeah, Fernando, he was pretty concerned on Saturday, said I was half a second off Lando. Lando managed to out-qualify the Mercedes cars, but it was, I thought, a really good race from Alonso and from Alpine. Alonso said that he felt everything was very well executed. He obviously made a really good start to even get ahead of Russell, but was never going to hold on, and he knew that full well. And he said everything went very, very smoothly, so he was really pleased with that. I said to him after the race, because everyone was pretty hot and sweaty, including the journalists, I must say, and I said, like, physically, how difficult did you find that race? And he went, not at all. He said, I don't know if the young guys struggle, but I'm absolutely fine. So another bit of Fernando Alonso self-adulation. But very good display, I think, from him. I think Ocon, I mean, did well to get a few points, particularly given the penalty. I think that yeah, I don't really see how there's any justification, really. I thought the 5-second penalty was completely justified for the move on Sonoda. I don't think he can really argue against that, to be honest. And I think for McLaren, yeah, it was one of those weekends. Obviously, they got the new update on the car. They need to do some work to fully understand it. And these things always take time. We saw that with AlphaTauri. Gasly had an absolute stinker on Saturday and Sunday after saying on Friday, oh, actually, we're looking really good. And then by contrast, Sonoda... He qualified in Q3. Reckons he probably would have scored some points today had he not had that clash with Ocon. So I think that midfield fight is really shaping up nicely. I think Alpine and McLaren, they're taking such different approaches to updates as well. Alpine have kind of gone for lots of little bits, whereas McLaren have gone for the big package in Spain, the big package here as well. And I think for Ricciardo as well, again, a step behind Norris, but another couple of points on the board as well, which I think that it's not the results we want to see from him, but it's still better. It's still like, okay, that's a couple of races in a row now in the points. So small positives to be taken there.
Zach Brown afterwards tweeting, hey, double points finish. We move on, kind of, I can't remember, it's not on my screen, but, you know, we move forward, we fight the next one, et cetera, et cetera. So a bit of congratulations. And then, Monday morning comes around, back at the factory. We've got to improve those vehicles. Matt, let me ask you a little bit about drivers for next year. I don't know if this class is a silly season yet. We've seen talk of Vettel to the second seat at McLaren, which Vettel said, oh, that'd be interesting. What with me having not said anything. And Daniel Ricciardo, Andrea Seidel coming out after the race today, appearing to, you know, fully back Ricciardo and saying, no, I want him in the car, and which is kind of a very open statement of support in 2023. And, you know, all those things can't be good for just getting your head down and moving forward to the future. So, Matt, how are you reading that situation, sort of the driver market next year?
Well, it shouldn't be uncertainty on his part. He has a contract until the end of next year, so... Two parts to that. One, he obviously had that blunder, what was it, about Spain time, where he said, oh, we're going to sit down and talk about it at the end of the year, and he didn't mean that, and he corrected himself, but obviously that sort of projected it into the limelight a lot about his future. And then you've had the other bits of context now, which is obviously Zach Brown coming out with that statement saying we need to see more from him. That's about as on the nose as you get, especially from Zach Brown, who's quite a good, a neutral kind of guy. And then the other point is you've got this expanding McLaren driver pool as a, you know, IndyCar and Formula E, that you've got people who are McLaren drivers, not McLaren IndyCar drivers or McLaren Formula E drivers, so that allows a bit of speculation to come. Obviously, we've had Alex Palou's contract extension this week, where he's a McLaren driver now from Chip Ganassi. He's not a McLaren IndyCar driver or Arrow McLaren. And then Colton Herta testing the F1 car as well at Portimao expensively. None of it helps, but like you say, Seidel seems fairly pro him staying. Norris was asked about it as well, and he didn't sort of... he didn't like absolutely definitively say it has to be Ricciardo next year, but he says they get on well. And it comes back to that debate. Is Ricciardo having a particular stinker? Potentially. And I also think this result flatters him a bit. There was obviously a massive gap to Norris again, but, you know, through sort of their crashes for Ocon and Sonoda and Stroll and whatever, that they've been allowed to finish back to back. But there is the wider element of how good is Norris, and is that why this talk about Ricciardo has come to fruition, is because he's so far ahead. I like the Vettel rumour, though. I didn't see that one coming. I think there's absolutely nothing to it. I don't see why, when they had this congested pool of young up-and-coming talent, you know, Herta and Pato Ward as well, why you'd turn to Vettel, who more than likely will stay at Aston Martin. But it's always good fun when those ones come out. There's always good fun. It takes you about 30 seconds to consider all the pros and cons, but it's 30 seconds that I suppose could be worth spent.
Key, when you said Pat O'Ward there, you made it sound like an Irish farmer called Pat O'Ward. I enjoyed that, but no, you are on the money. I think silly season is definitely starting to ramp up now. I think we've got to look at what Piastri's obviously central to it, Ricciardo's future central to it. I agree, I don't personally see Vettel to McLaren. I don't think that's a realistic thing. My gut feeling is Ricciardo will be there next season, but let's see how this silly season does play out. Logan Sargeant, is he maybe coming into the picture as well with Williams? Obviously, Doralton, an American company, getting an American in the car. The next few weeks, I think, are going to be really spicy for silly season, so definitely one to keep an eye on. I will, picking up on Vettel, it's worth noting him and Stroll nearly had like a really, really close run in together at the final corner on the final lap. And like Stroll completely cut across Vettel to keep 10th place and get that final point. So not sure it'll cause too much friction at Aston, but it was definitely a bit of a talking point after the race. So if anyone can go and find, well worth watching the onboards there, because Vettel pretty much had Stroll and then Stroll just chops across and goes, nope, that point's mine.
I did watch the onboard of that, and Stroll just didn't get on the throttle coming out of the final corner, and surprised Vettel, I think you say, cut across him, and nerfing off the boss's son on the very final corner, who was going to get a point in a Grand Prix. Never very good. But anyway, Q, I'll let you have your say, and then Jess.
I think it was quite deliberate from Stroll. He just parked it on the apex, didn't he? Just to, because Vettel had sort of come cut across the apex, so he was going to be back on the power alley and have that potential run to the line. And I think Stroll actually quite smartly covered him off to preserve the points. Like, nah, I'm going to kill your momentum. But interesting. Nothing to spend too much time on, but sort of fair play to Aston that there wasn't a call saying, you know, I won't do it. I won't do the accent, but, you know, going, hey, Sebastian, this is Lawrence. Just if you know what's good for you, just back off a little bit. I was pleased to see there was none of that.
In a way, Stroll was a little lucky that it was Vettel behind him when he was doing that, because it was super close. And Vettel's reaction times, I mean, I know it's weird talking about Vettel as an old timer, but the reactions certainly haven't gone. Because he was able to adapt real quick to that. But there's still rumours about whether Vettel's going to continue or not. He's been very vocal about whether, you know, he races in Formula One to win, and it's been a very long time now since his last win, and Aston don't seem to be any closer to getting any victories or even podiums at this point. I mean, they were both fighting for the final point, even though five other cars retired from the race. That's you know, I don't think that's something that they're going to necessarily be celebrating. And I mean, I know maybe we shouldn't kind of put any weight to any rumours that maybe other media outlets that we share the paddock with push out, but there seems to be a strong inclination that maybe Vettel won't be here next year because he's got better things to do, like save the world.
And we need him for that. The future of humanity requires Sebastian Vettel to do his bit. But one of the reasons that I love him is that we saw him leaving Austria on his bicycle and then stopping for loads of pictures with fans and kids and having loads of time. And he doesn't need to do that. And a bit like, you know, reasons why we love great heroes and sports people. Rachel Brooks from Sky tweeted out a picture of Charles Leclerc, who had obviously had one of the most awful moments of his season, and on his way to the pen to do all the media interviews and that rigmarole of talking to us lot, was stopping to have pictures taken with kids and a smile on his face. And she put a picture of him just stopping to have, and it's like, when people do this, drivers like that and like Vettel, it's great to have them in the sport, but you want to see him competitive anyway. Right, last couple of things to talk about. Luke, I'll come back to you. Just talk about that development battle as we talk about AlphaTauri, one team, one car finished for them. Williams, one car finished. Alfa Romeo, one car finished. Haas, one car finished. If you look at Alfa Romeo, in the first six races, Bottas scored 38 points. In the last six races, he scored only 8. The development race has changed so much over the course of this season so far. How do you see that lower half of the midfield playing out now heading towards the summer break?
Yeah, it has. And I think we always knew, given the new nature of these regulations, that you're going to make big gains. Like, if you bring a big package and it works, then it's going to give you a big step forward. And I think we've seen the teams largely who've kind of held off and been more conservative in their approach to updates, they've paid the price for that. We've seen that with AlphaTauri. I mean, Gasly said I think over Silverstone and Austria, how desperate he was to finally get the update. Got it on Friday, absolutely flying, really, really happy. And then come Saturday, he said, no, it's absolutely terrible and it feels like a different car, and had a pretty shocking weekend. Then you look at Haas, for example, who've barely touched that car with major updates since the start of the season. And yet they've been able to unlock more and more pace and find more time and make these steps forward and still score points. So it's been an interesting swing back and forth. We've got Haas will bring their update package to Hungary. And Kevin Magnussen has already said he's quite anxious, actually, to see what that package does. Because if you remember back in 2019, Haas had a really good start. Then they brought an update package for the car in Spain and it completely ruined it, to the point that come Silverstone, they were back to the original spec car that they had in testing. So it really did swing back and forth. Alfa Romeo, they're in the same boat, sort of waiting on updates, basically. I spoke to Joe after the race and he said, he said basically this is kind of where we are right now. We're outside of the points were struggling to keep up with the other midfield teams. So it's just gonna keep swinging back and forth. I think Williams, they sound pretty upbeat. I mean, Nicholas Latifi, not a great weekend, but actually he was very positive in speaking in the pen after the race and said, yeah, there's a good chance to I think make some steps forward with this. Alex Albon, he said they can aim for Q2 on a regular basis now. So I think that all the way through that sort of lower half of the field, it's looking like everyone's got something to either look forward to or reasons to be positive right now. And I think that it's exciting. Like, I know we focus so much on the fight at the front, but I think that development battle through the midfield and sort of lower half of the season, I think that's going to be a really good one to follow and to watch, because I think we could still see some decent swings in the pecking order.
Absolutely. Right. As we finish off, we head towards Hungary next. Not long to wait. That's only a week away. And then we head into the summer break, where I'm sure, obviously, all Formula One journalists are sitting on a beach for 4 weeks with a cold drink in their hand. But Matt, you will be. Matt, I presume you'll be in Hungary because you're in the UK this weekend. Looking forward to the battle next weekend as it resumes in just a few days' time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll be reuniting with Luke Smith at Stansted Airport in a couple of days to head out to Hungary. I'm looking forward to that one. Again, go back a couple of years ago, that's a Red Bull track, but I think from the certain tracks, it might be a Ferrari track to see what they can do. And it, you know, it always offers that glimmer of hope if they can get a win. And then, Martin, you're damn right, the week after that, I'm going to be sat by a pool with a pint, and I cannot wait.
But before that, when you get off the plane from Hungary, I'm going to snaffle at all of you for some podcast recordings before you go on your holiday. But anyway, Jess, as we head towards the summer break, oh, it's time to sort of look back a little bit, isn't it? And take stock on the season we've had so far. And there's almost a sense of disappointment, I think, that it's not a closer battle at the front, but also some admiration that Max's a world championship season he's having. How are you feeling as we approach the halfway point?
I want to be optimistic because, yes, as you say, it's time for reflection. And, you know, I think for the most part, we've had some really interesting races so far this season. It's always interesting when we have a new era of Formula One as to, you know, how has it played out. I think we've got some videos planned to give our views on have the new regs worked and how are they going to potentially move forward into the second half of the season. So there'll be plenty of content coming out, even if we are going to go without racing for a few weeks. But yeah, I think there's so many narratives that are still weaving their way through, which should keep us entertained. But I said this a few weeks ago, but I can't help but thinking this is Max Verstappen's championship to lose now. And like, if I know Max is very, very pragmatic about it and keeps saying, well, we've still got so many races to go, but it goes back to that element of, yes, there's a possibility that they could throw it all away, but the probability is that they're not. And, you know, I hope that we do go into Hungary and Ferrari bring it all together and it does prove to be a Ferrari track and they get the points that they need. But I think it's just a scramble of too little too late. I hope I'm proved wrong. I just can't see it happening. I can't see Ferrari recovering this, to be honest. I think they've had too many mistakes or fumbles or things not going their way or tracks that haven't suited their car. And we've got to this point where arguably, yes, they do have the better package, but they seem to have a load of issues internally that they've not quite squared away yet. And I think Max and Red Bull do not give leeway for that.
Absolutely. Looking forward to those videos that you'll be putting out. And finally, Luke, I hope that whilst you've been recording, your Airbnb flatmate Alex Kalinorkis has cooked you a hearty, nutritious meal rather than getting on with his driver ratings.
No, but I'm going to put myself together a caprese salad once we finish recording, which I am thoroughly looking forward to. And I know. It's been a very, very, to quote our esteemed colleague Stuart Codling, a highly convivial race weekend. I must say, poor Ricard, it's a track that's had a lot of criticism. It's not going to be on the calendar next year from everything we know. Does it provide great racing? Not really. Is the traffic situation always pretty bad? Yes, it is. Was the coffee very good? No, it wasn't. The priorities here, obviously. Look, France is a country that obviously has such a rich heritage in motorsport, and I think it's somewhere we will come back to in the future, and it's somewhere that's always got to be on Formula One's radar in terms of having a sort of a presence in. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do moving forward. But yeah, it's been, I've done three Paul Ricard races. And I think this has definitely been my favourite one in terms of the all-round sort of event and everything. And it's been pleasant. It's been nice to spend a bit of time in France. It's been very, very hot, as hot as it was when we left it in the UK, just with the benefit of aircon. And I believe in Budapest next week, it is going to be a similar kind of temperature, sort of 33, 34 degrees. So, Matt Hugh, I hope you have packed your shorts.
We look forward to one more race then the summer break. Thank you for listening to the Autosport podcast today. If you like what we do here, you can always drop by Apple Podcasts or iTunes, leave us a five-star rating review and some words. If you like, you can email us podcast@autosport.com. I want to say thank you very much to everyone who emailed after the podcast where Jess and Megan had their view to put across on what happened with some of the fan abuse in Austria. And I really appreciate all the emails that you sent in. They were very well worded. It makes a break from the normal cesspool that is social media comments for the Autosport podcast listeners to send.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Things so considered. Thank you. Podcast@autosport.com is our email address. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Feeling stuck in your current job? Looking for a career pivot? Are you a proven leader looking to step up? The University of Maryland's Robert H. Smith School of Business prepares students to meet challenges, solve problems, and obtain a profound understanding of how to operate in the modern economy. With MBA and MS programs offering flexible options to fit your lifestyle and goals. GMAT and GRE not required. Learn more today at go.umd.edu/smithschool. University of Maryland Smith School of Business. Inspired, fearless, unstoppable.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.